Welcome back to Eco Talk. And have you ever looked out over the vast ocean and wondered what's below the surface? Well, we've been looking into that, and lots of scientists and environmentalists are appalled by what we're finding, which is basically somehow we humans on land have been impacting that great vast body of water, many of them out there, that make up most of our planet. And we're going to be focusing this segment on the state of our oceans because there's a fabulous front page cover article in Mother Jones, this edition, on the state of our oceans, and it was put together by author and film documentarian Julia Whitty, and we're pleased to have her joining us this segment. You just right off the boat, is that what I understand from studying this, at least documenting it?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
Were you recently on a boat out there taking some of the information and putting it into the article?
I was actually out on two research vessels with two different crews, one in the Gulf of Mexico and one from Woods Hole in Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Looking at two different things, but two different issues that are greatly affecting the health of the oceans right now. One is global climate change, and one is the introduction of pollutants from the land into the ocean.
And are they both in equally bad shape in terms of impact?
They are, in very different ways. The Gulf of Mexico is suffering from what we call a dead zone. There are currently 150 dead zones on planet Earth, and their number is doubling every decade. The Gulf of Mexico dead zone is the second largest currently on the planet, and it's caused primarily by the Green Revolution, whereby we took chemical fertilizers and made the land bloom. Ironically, this made the ocean die, and sadly, all of those fertilizers, as they wash down the Mississippi River into the Gulf of Mexico, cause an area where absolutely no marine life can live whatsoever.
So our notion as humans of the ocean as being so much bigger than us, how could we possibly have an impact, is incorrect and, in fact, dangerous.
That's truly dangerous. In the last 20 to 50 years, we have really reached out into every single molecule of the ocean and changed it. And, in fact, everywhere that science looks today, they see nothing but human changes happening on a rapidly increasing scale.
And they're not dumping too much in the ocean anymore, are they? Or at least legally they can't do that anymore. That was like standard practice, wasn't it? Whether it's cruise ships dumping their waste or, you know, people just seeing that as a big garbage disposal site.
Yeah, and there still is a lot of dumping done at sea. There's a lot of illegal dumping done all over the world, and there's many nations that still don't have any regulations on dumping. So while some countries have cleaned up their acts a little bit, there's still a lot that goes into the sea. There's also a lot that runs off into the sea, and as well as these dead zones, we're finding that, you know, areas around sewage outflows are being, the animals that live in those areas are being hugely impacted, among other things, by the pharmaceuticals that are in our own bodies that work their way out through sewage outfalls.
Now, talk about something that many of our listeners may not be aware of, and that's the conveyor belt effect. And first of all, what is the ocean's conveyor belt? What do you mean by that? And then what happens if there's some interruption in its natural flow?
Well, scientists realize that the oceans, which we have different names for, Pacific, Indian, Atlantic, are really one world ocean, and they're connected by what's known as the ocean conveyor belt. This is a series of, in essence, rivers flowing in the ocean basins. Some are flowing at the surface and are big, powerful currents that we know, such as the Gulf Stream. Others are flowing much deeper at 15 or 20,000 feet below, and they may be counterflowing to the prevailing surface currents, and they may be carrying much heavier and colder water. But this system basically connects all the ocean basins of the world so that a drop of rain that falls in the North Atlantic will emerge in the North Pacific 1,200 years later. And this ocean conveyor belt is an important component of our global climate. It's what awards us the climate that we know now and that we have evolved in. As we look into the past and study times when the ocean conveyor belt has changed or stopped running completely, we can see that these have led to massive global climate changes, some of which have been almost unsustainable for life on our planet. And we know now that we are actually contributing some of the components that may lead to a breakdown of the ocean conveyor belt system. And in fact, just this past December, British researchers found the first evidence of dramatic slowing of the ocean conveyor belts.
And I imagine this is where global warming comes in, and also acidity in the ocean. Can you describe the connections there?
Well, ocean as we warm up the atmosphere, we also warm up the oceans. The two of those combined are melting the ice sheets, as we've heard. The Arctic and the Antarctic are both melting faster than scientists have predicted. It's very startling to scientists, the rapidity with which this is happening. All of that melting releases fresh water into the ocean. That changes the chemistry of the ocean. It becomes fresher in places and actually saltier in others. And that imbalance is what changes the ocean conveyor belt, because those rivers within the ocean are completely determined by chemistry. So as you change the saltiness of the ocean, it affects where and when those rivers run. The other thing that's happening is as we add warming into the atmosphere and into the ocean, we are leading to acidification of the ocean. And this is a very dangerous prospect that we also can look back into the past and see times when this has happened on planet Earth, and it hasn't been good. Recently, researchers out of Australia did an experiment where they tested little microorganisms, all the plankton and things that are the basis of the food web, and they took a look at what would happen to them in oceans that are as acidic as we think the oceans will be by the year 2100. And they found when they inserted little animals, the basis of the entire marine food web and perhaps the global food web, they found that these creatures, their shells and their skeletons and their parts that were made from calcium carbonate dissolved within 48 hours of contact with this acidic ocean.
So humans and other creatures are endangered by this trend if we don't stop it. Before we get to what's being done to address this frightening trends, just mention a little bit about the overfishing problem, which many people may be somewhat aware of, but there's a staggering statistic. You say 88 billion pounds of life, including sea turtles, sharks, and seabirds, are killed indiscriminately by overfishing. Is this something that, we should know more about? Clearly we should. Does the fishing industry, are they concerned? Are they taking action? I mean, talk about a waste of life.
Yeah, there's a lot of waste. We have industrialized modern fisheries, and sadly about 25% of what they catch there is no market for, and it's thrown overboard dead or dying. And as you said, this is 88 billion pounds, that's billion with a B, pounds of living creatures that are killed and simply tossed overboard every year. The ocean cannot sustain this, and we are already seeing that. In the year 2000 and perhaps earlier by different calculations, the world fish catch leveled off and began to decline, and this was despite more and better technologies and more intensive fisheries, yet we cannot get as many fish out of the sea as we used to. And we're now catching per capita about the same amount that we were catching 40 years ago in the 1960s. This is bad for the ocean, and it's bad for us. One in six people on planet Earth actually depend on protein as their single biggest source of protein. They need fish for that. And without it, these poor people primarily will become even poorer, more malnourished. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of problems on that. So we have big fisheries problems. A lot of commercial fishermen know this. None of them are planning for their kids to become commercial fishermen, but we have not been able to adequately regulate how we run fisheries in the ocean.
Okay, and before we get to solutions in a moment, we have to mention this other startling statistic. You say that the shipping fleet spew as many greenhouse gases into the atmosphere a year as the entire United States does?
In some of the gases, the nitrous oxides, for instance, which the fishing fleets contribute as much as the entire U.S., which is the biggest contributor on the planet. And in fact, shipping in general is an under-examined source of pollution, both in the air and in the water. It's another problem we have to look at with the ocean.
So, pardon the pun, but a sea change is needed. Why is mainstream media not really covering this as much as it should, given the seriousness of the threat? And I understand the Nature Conservancy is doing some good work here.
Well, I think the media isn't covering this because it's a complex story and because even the media hasn't been connecting the dots and realizing that you add up all these little stories that are coming out daily, weekly, or monthly, you put them together and you start to see this big picture really, truly is alarming. This is the threat to our homeland security more than any other thing. And I think if people understood that fact, there would be more of a clamor to actually take it on. There is some good work being done amongst some environmentalist groups. They're trying to address some of the overfishing issues and some of the pollution issues. There are things individuals can do. They can actually determine what fish you eat. And in fact, this current issue, the March-April of Mother Jones has a little consumer buying guide for what fish you could eat and which you might want to avoid. So there is stuff that can be done, but basically we need to take, the political structure needs to take these issues on with the energy that no one in the world has yet shown.
Yeah, there have been a number of studies. I think Pew Oceans has done a lot of research lately on oceans and charitable trusts and putting money behind it. But is it too little, too late, or how much of this do you think can be reversed? Or is it like global warming? We can't stop it. It's just a matter of can we slow it fast enough to stop catastrophe?
I think most scientists nowadays would agree that what we're looking at is mitigating the effects that are already underway. Basically, we're driving the equivalent of an aircraft carrier at full steam ahead right now, and you know how hard it is to stop those things or turn them around. However, what we do right now will affect 100 years from now and what world our grandchildren live in, whether it's tenable or not tenable. And for every dollar we invest now, we're probably going to save thousands of dollars in the future for what will be required to maintain this planet as a livable space. So we need to make these efforts, and we need to start making them immediately.
And everyone needs to go out and buy Mother Jones. I'm so glad that they devoted an entire issue to this very comprehensive story at 12 pages, I think it is. So go out and get yourself informed. It's only our oceans, only our planet. We only have one last time I checked. Thanks, Julia Witte, for doing this important work, author and film documentarian, and for joining us today on EcoTalk.
Thank you, Betsy.
If you go to our website at www.ecotalk.net, you can find links to all of today's topics and our guests, and also learn a little bit more about our program. And stay with us. When we get back, we'll be talking about efforts to open up more coastlines to offshore oil drilling.